Bright Light, Bright Light, the New York-based Welsh electronic artist's new single, You Want My, is set for release across all platforms. You Want My is taken from Bright Light, Bright Light's upcoming fifth LP, Enjoy Youth, set for release on May the 17th, 2024. Both the single and LP are released via YSKWN with Megaforce Records, and Rod Thomas of Bright Light, Bright Light is joining us now. Hello, Rod. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I believe that I'm speaking to you there. You're live there over in New York, New York.
I am indeed in New York, New York, city that never sleeps, apparently. I try to get a few hours, but yeah. Nice to be talking to someone back in the UK, though.
Yes, it's nice to catch up with you there. Now, for listeners who are new to your music, please could you tell us when your musical journey began?
Oh, my God. saving all of the childhood trauma. Let's just say 2006. I put out my first single in 2006, which was a little bit different. And it was under my own name, Rod Thomas. I was just doing kind of like acoustic-y, folky kind of stuff, predictable. And then I kind of got better at producing songs. And then 2009, 2010, I took on the name Bright Light, Bright Light and started making pop music, which I'd always wanted to do. I just wasn't good enough at doing it until that point. And I learned a lot and I worked with a lot of people that made electronic pop music. And then it's just gone from there, really.
And the name Bright Light, Bright Light, as soon as I saw that, I was thinking of, you know, Bright Light, Bright Light from the Gremlins. And then I found out that that is one of your favorite films.
Yes. Well done. Well done. Good spot.
So, yes, Bright Light, Bright Light. Because obviously the Gremlins, if nobody's seen the Gremlins before, they don't like the bright lights.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Gremlins, watch it immediately. It's such a fantastic film. It's so fun. Maybe not if you have kids under like sort of 7 or 8 years old. It's a bit scary, but
yeah, definitely not Gremlins 2, because is that the one where they're in the when they're in the television studio?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
They've got somebody dressed up as Dracula and
yep. Amazing.
Hilarious. But yes, catch that one. And also you like I believe you like Home Alone as well.
I do. I mean, it was very interesting moving to New York, actually, and realizing how many of the films that I loved as a kid were set in New York. Because, you know, when you're young, you don't really realize what a place is. You just sort of see it on the screens. And then I was walking around being like, oh, OK, I recognize a lot of these buildings from, you know, delusional childhood fantasy worlds of like Gremlins and people escaping, thieves on the run, and, you know, flying things all around, and Ghostbusters and everything.
Ghostbusters, yes, that's another one as well there in Manhattan there. Absolutely fantastic films there. Now, you were born in South Wales. Mm. What was it like being brought up in the valleys? And were you part of any choirs when you were growing up? Or did you take part in any maybe school musical productions that you could tell us about?
Yes, all of the above, really. It was, you know, it was very peaceful growing up where I did. I'm from the coal mining valleys, which obviously were no longer coal mining valleys by the time I was born. So it was very quiet, not really much going on down there. And that's why I got so into music, I think. I used to listen to the radio all the time as a way to learn about the world, you know, and I would put on like, I listened to like Joe Wiley and all the kind of indie shows, Steve Lamacq, things like that.
Yes.
But I love my pop music as well. So I don't know if you remember Longwave Radio Atlantic 252, but that
I certainly do. Yeah, because
that was my jam.
Yeah, I went over there and did a couple of voiceovers there in a little, it's in a little place called County Meath. And the little village is called Trim in Southern Ireland. Yes, went across there and it's very unusual where this radio station was based, because it was in an old doctor's surgery, would you believe?
Yeah, it's the whole legacy of that radio station was wild. So I was sort of growing up between the kind of cool indie bands on the Steve Lamacq show, like Catatonia and Kinnicky, and like The Real McCoy and Ace of Base, and the pop music on Longwave Radio Atlantic 252. So I've always had this sort of like odd musical match, and then bringing into play the Welsh tradition of being in choirs and singing. I was in a choir in school, obviously everyone was. And I've just always really liked singing, and I just didn't think that everyone didn't. You know, I didn't think it was anything special or anything particularly like career driven for me. I just thought everyone sang a lot and realized that they don't. And I just kept doing it, and here I am somehow.
Yes, and you're doing very well as well. Now, have you always been a singer, or have you had any other professions before turning professional, as it were?
I used to work at a record label back in the day. I moved to London to work at a record label. So my dream was to do PR for bands. That was what I wanted to do when I moved to London. And I ended up working for a record label called PS, who at the time were doing Soul Wax around their Radio Soul Wax album. And they did Tim Burgess's debut album that I was working on as like an intern.
Yes.
And then I got like a full-time job after doing my internship as a receptionist. Very glamorous.
Lovely.
And then a PA and then a marketing assistant. And then out of nowhere, I realized that I'd kind of gone as far as I could in that company. And so I quit, which I do not recommend anyone does. And in this day and age, do not quit your jobs. But I did in 2004.
Yeah.
2006, sorry. Not that early, 2006. And I started singing on the subway in London, on the underground. I started busking. And I did that for 2 years, 3 years, actually, alongside bar work and temp work. And I saved up enough to start recording demos and started putting them out and started getting some radio play, which it sounds so fantastical now when I think about it. And there was a very high risk factor, and I had absolutely zero plan. All of these things are ways to say, do not take any business advice from me. but it worked. And, you know, and I'm still making music, which is amazing. I'm really happy that I've got to tour the world and I get to release albums. Like you said, I'm on my fifth album now, which is much more than I ever thought I'd do, really. Like, where I'm from, and probably where you're from as well, people have jobs that you can sort of explain clearly to people, like a teacher, or they're an accountant, or they are a doctor or something. Like, where I'm from, my grandparents were farmers and my parents were teachers. So to sort of try and say like, well, I'm a musician, and everyone's like, I never thought that it would be a job. I thought it would just be a hobby that I had alongside a more traditional job. So I feel very grateful that I get to do this.
And what was it like when you were performing there in the tube stations? Because I reckon that that would have been quite scary, but at the same time, it would build up your confidence as well, because you're actually, every moment, you're performing to a different kind of audience that's come down the escalators.
Yeah, it was definitely scary. I think it was okay once I started, but the preamble was very scary because I was just sort of guessing that, like, oh, people would be rude, or people would tell you to shut up, or that it was hard to be heard over everything. But I will say, everyone that interacted with me for 3 years was nice, apart from one woman. And the same one woman was rude to me 5 or 6 times.
Wow.
Everyone else was quite nice, or they minded their business, you know? And I made lots of friends doing it. I'm still friends now with people that saw me busking. Mm-hmm. One incredible guy, Chris Sweeney, who's done like TV shows. He worked on Fleabag. Back in the day, he saw me busking, and I had my MySpace address on my guitar. That's how long ago it was.
Excellent.
And he sent me a message, and he ended up doing a music video for me. He's done videos for Florence and the Machine and Jessie Ware. And so I met him, which was amazing. I met loads of people that still come to my shows, and it was definitely a confidence booster. You know, it made me a lot tougher as a musician, and it gave me a lot more confidence in myself as a performer to sort of hold my own, and taught me about just sort of like just getting better and practicing and things. So it was a really amazing experience, really incredible. I wouldn't change it for the world.
And I would say that the busking thing is very, very good. I mean, I couldn't believe it just the other a couple of months back in Newcastle upon Tyne, on this big street called Northumberland Street, which is where all the shops are. Mm-hmm. There was two girls singing there. And they sounded absolutely amazing. So I got in touch with them. I said, would you like to come on the radio show? And then I exchanged a telephone, my mobile number. Then the next thing was, they've just won the Voice UK for 2023.
Really?
Yes. So two girls who went from busking on Northumberland Street to now be the winners of the Voice UK there. So
wow,
it's but just also
good to know that you good to know that you spotted that without even knowing it. So congratulations to you.
Yes,
you've got an A&R future.
There you go, Ben. But yes, the busking there, excellent. You've had some great ground there, learning your craft, as it were, to a wide audience there. Excellent stuff there, Rod. Now, you've released four studio albums to date. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
In 2012, Make Me Believe in Hope, and 2014's Life is Easy. 2016's Choreography, which won the WINQ Magazine's Musician of the Year Award, and saw you to become the first and to date the only unsigned artist to perform on Graham Norton's BBC One TV show with Sir Elton John in tow, and 2020's Fun City, which was a UK number one dance album featuring 12 LGBTQ plus collaborators.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like working with Elton John and appearing on such a big television show?
Terrifying. Working with Elton, not terrifying. So much fun. He is, we're still really good friends. We email all the time. He's really, really, really one of the nicest people that I've ever met in the world. And I know that there's all of the diva.
I think it's that documentary in 1997 or whatever it was.
Yes.
That's the one that made everyone. That's right.
Completely amazing. It was like the first time that I met him, I was obviously very scared. And, you know, because I grew up listening to him, everyone that is younger than him did, because he was famous from such a young age.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very shy the first time I met him. And then the second or third time, I was, you know, a little bit looser and just a bit sillier because I'm a ridiculous person. And he was like, oh, you're very funny, actually. You know, when I first met you, you were really shy. And I was like, babes, you're Elton John. Like everyone's nervous when they meet you. And he's like, yeah, I guess that's right. And we became such good friends. So when I was making the Choreography album, I had All in the Name that I wanted to record with him. So I went to LA to record with him in the same studio that Gaga did the Fame Monster in.
Wow.
Actually. And so I turned up and I knew that we'd do it really quick because he's always super fast. We'd done one duet, I Wish We Were Leaving, before that. So I knew the kind of speed. And we did the All in the Name really quick. And he was like, well, is there anything else you want me to do? And I was like, actually, babes, yes. And I prepared two other songs. And I said, well, you know, if you wanted to add some background vocal to this, he was like, yes, I'll be your BV girl.
Excellent.
So he just did, he just heard them on the spot and added background vocals to Symmetry of Two Hearts and Run It Back to You as well. And it was, we had so much fun. The thing that is so amazing about this man is that he just loves music so much.
Yes.
And you can tell when he's on stage and you see the live footage that he just gets such a kick out of the world of music. And he has his radio show and he champions new artists all the time. So it's all about music as discovery and music as pleasure. You know, it's amazing to see somebody, not just at his age, but at his stage in the career after so many albums, to still find music that magical. That's very inspirational to me. And then getting to perform with him on Graham Norton was really, really wild. For me, that was very scary because that was the biggest thing I'd ever done. And when they told me who else was going to be on the show with us that you sit on the couch with, it was Jodie Foster, Ryan Gosling, Russell Crowe, Greg Davis, Tom Daley, Elton John, and me. And I was like, I'm the least famous person you've ever had on this show, surrounded by lots of the most famous people. So I felt very like, you know, wearing like a sort of like lime green suit while everyone else is looking like $1 million. It looked like about like a million pence.
I'll have to watch that. I'll have to watch that footage. I bet it's on YouTube somewhere.
It is on YouTube. Yeah. It really was like such a special moment. And, you know, for anyone who's like a casual listener, like independent people like me really don't get to do these things.
No.
And I'm so grateful to everybody on the team of Graham Norton's show and to Graham himself, like, who's lovely and we're still friends. They really took a chance on me as an independent. And, you know, you guys as well, like championing my song, the to survive or to get heard as an independent artist is really difficult. And I'm sure anyone out there making music knows that, that it's, yes, you can put music out yourself, but there's also a million more people doing that. So it's proportionally, it's no easier to get heard or to have your songs translate to the public. So everyone that's given me all these opportunities, I'm so thankful for, and it's been amazing. They've all been great people. And for me, my whole career is just based on good people, not money, not connections, but like really lovely people that have taken a chance on someone that they thought, you're a good person, let's give you a shot.
That's right. And make good music as well, Rod.
Try. Yes, that's kind of important. Yeah,
it's very important. Now, keeping on with the theme of Elton John, I heard that you've toured with Elton John, appearing on 55 shows with his, I mean, what was it like on the road, and where did you visit when you were on tour with Elton?
Played in Newcastle. We did. That was one of the first shows. Actually, when we played in Newcastle, it was one of my favorite shows because I used to take photos of the audience after our set.
Right.
And when I put our center put the light up to take a photo with the lady in the front row, it was being sick Newcastle. No. And I was like, regional pride. That's absolutely amazing. It would have been the same in Neath, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that was before Elton even came on. I was like, oh, love, you've got a long night ahead of you. the shows were so good. You know, it was my first time playing to audiences that big across the world. So I opened for him in UK, across Europe. We played in Russia, even North America, did two shows in Canada. And it was just such a brilliant experience. And it made me write bigger songs. So it was before I did the choreography album. And I wanted to write choreography to be able to play those songs in a room that size and feel amazing. So it helped me grow a lot as a writer and as an artist. We had so much fun. Like, we'd go record shopping for each other and he'd email me, is there anything you're looking for? And I'd email him like, oh, I found this. Do you have this record? When we were in different cities. And I think I got him Faith by George Michael on vinyl, and he got me the Phil Spector Christmas album, iconic.
Fabulous.
We really, really had the best time. It was just magic.
Now, you released your debut film score in 2023. For All Man, the International Male Story, while in 2020, 11 of your songs soundtracked the cult hit web series, The Disappointments. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, you began your flirtation with composition for Moving Images, writing the theme for UK comedy legend Mark Gatiss' BBC Four Talking Head series, Queers, which also appeared at the Old Vic for a special event. What was it like composing a soundtrack, and what was the brief you were given?
It was really fun. It's been my life dream, actually, to do a film score. And it was so much fun. A completely different part of your brain that you use doing that, because it was all instrumental and not lyrical. So I'm used to writing lyrics and melodies together. But it was a really fun challenge. It's a documentary, so it's mostly conversation and dialogue or monologues, you know, because the narrator was silent, or the interviewer was silent in those pieces. So I had to leave a lot of space for the actual words being spoken. So I tried to create the music around what the people were saying and try and orchestrate the speech versus song lyrics in effect. And it was so fun. It was really a cool subject matter. And a lot of my friends were actually interviewed in it just by chance. They didn't know that I knew these people, like Jake Shears and Drew Drogi, who's this amazing comedian over here. And it was a really lovely experience. I got to go to the premiere and sort of take, you know, meet all the people from the film.
Wow.
And working with Mark on the Queers TV show was amazing as well. Mark is amazing. I was a huge fan of League of Gentlemen growing up, you know.
Yes.
All of his work, like Doctor Who, Sherlock, everything like that is just completely fantastic to me. And he's really one of the best people in the whole world. He's such a lovely man and he's hilarious. So when I met him because we both won an award at that Wink Awards where I won Musician of the Year. He won Man of the Year. And we ended up just chatting, and he was like, oh, where do you live? I said, I live in New York. He was like, oh, I'll be there next week. Let's have a coffee. So we did.
Excellent.
And in the meantime, we researched my music and was like, oh, would you want to have a go at writing the theme tune? And I literally sat down that day. I improvised something, sent it to him. He was like, it's perfect. That's great. And that was
excellent.
It.
Excellent. And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. Yeah. So, you know, growing up in the UK, I think that TV is such an institution. I know it's like a worldwide phenomenon, but there's something very special about British TV and yes. British soaps and British comedies and British dramas, you know, that we had in like the 90s and the 2000s growing up. So to feel like I was doing something with the BBC or with like something that was on British TV that people could yes. watch at home was so cool.
Now, what was it like to write for screen? Because in the past, you have written studio music for artists instead, such as Danny Minogue, Bananarama, and Erasure.
It was, yeah, screen is very different. Because you're not really writing for like a person. It's more sort of for the people watching. So you normally, if I'm writing a song for another artist, I'd be thinking about them, but there was yes. no one there to think about. So it's no. like thinking about the next step. And it was really cool. You know, I spend a lot of my time listening to film scores. That's my love, actually. So it was, I do a lot of passive research just by listening to those anyway. So trying to learn what you can do with a score and how scores work and yes. the themes and motifs you can use. And it was so great. It was a good palate cleanser from just writing songs all the time. And then once I'd finished that, I was definitely ready to start writing songs again. Back to the pop.
Back to the pop. Yes. Wait. Are you more comfortable with pop, would you say?
Yeah. Pop, dance, whatever. It was dance floor based pop music. So, you know, I'm from the radio school of the 90s where, yes, like Corona and The Real McCoy was dance music, but that was also pop music because yes. it was high up in the charts. So for me, they're kind of intertwined, and like Black Box is dance music, but that's very pop as well, you know. Yes. Or like I can't even think of something like Fragma, Toka's Miracle as yes. like a, you know, dance yep. but also very pop.
It is, yes. It's like a lot of the dance music, it's like a crossover kind of thing, yeah. you yeah, know, it's sure. all popular music. And of course me, well, I mean, I'm celebrating my 30th anniversary last year. Just wow. the end of last year was my 30th anniversary of doing legal broadcasting, because I used to run a radio station from my own house, and right. you could hear the music all across the estate and things. But amazing. Yes, 30 years. But what I was doing, you see, is I was playing all of the Coronas and mm-hmm. Real McCoys and all that. It was just a magical time, the 90s, for all the dance music and everything. Just great party atmosphere.
It was amazing. Yeah, like I remember like showing some of my friends in America, like over here, the Billboard chart has multiple charts. You have the dance chart, the Hot 100, the Bubbling Under, whereas yes. we just had one.
Yes.
And I'm sure there were other charts, but no one knew they existed in the public world, right? So you would just have in the top five, you'd have like Celine Dion, Rednecks, Real That's McCoy, right. and like Michael Bolton.
That's
and
right.
like it was so random. That, and like Mr. Blobby and Elton John head to head for Christmas number one. Like,
that's right.
It's such an insane world to live in at the time. And my friends in America can't believe that those were like the combinations of people that were like actually vying for the number one
position.
So yes. odd.
I know you wouldn't get, I know that kind of thing doesn't happen in the Billboard Hot 100. I know that for sure.
No.
Maybe they've got a silly chart somewhere as well, you know?
Yeah, the random chart.
The random chart, yes. Now, you're based in New York, as I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Has the Big Apple opened up lots of opportunities for you since making the move over there?
Yes. I've found over here that people in the music industry are much more... And when I say people in the music industry, I mean other artists
yeah.
or promoters or people that book you for shows. Have been a lot more open than people that I met in the UK. I moved over here knowing a handful of people. Admittedly, some of them were Scissor Sisters.
Yes.
So that was a bit of a boon. But
that helps.
They, you know, I was just introduced to people and they were like, oh, that sounds really cool. Here's my email, whatever, whatever. And in the UK, people weren't really willing to share connections that they had, or they weren't as like receptive to new people. It was a little bit at the time in the sort of like 2010s or whatever, mm-hmm. it was very cutthroat. Everyone was either signed to a major label or they were worthless.
Yes.
And I was one of the worthless people. So I watched all of my friendship group get signed to Polydor or Island or Sony.
Yes.
And not me. And I just realized very quickly that I was kind of not allowed to sit at those tables. And I just had enough. So yes. I moved to New York, and people were just so much more welcoming and fun, and really just wanted to make music versus like make music that would sell, if yes. that makes sense.
Yes.
And I also have nothing against major labels. Like, no, I think I have friends that work there who work so hard, and they work on amazing artists, really amazing artists. And my friends that got signed were amazing artists as well. But the difference in perspective of like, oh, just because you don't have a deal doesn't mean that you're not worth taking a chance on or working with. That was like the big shift.
Yeah.
So I've had so many more opportunities to work with people that I've loved and respected over here, and to tour and to travel and to write and produce for people. And I found making a network here much easier than over there. And it also gave me the confidence to go back to the UK whenever I was there and feel a lot more confident in my skills. So
yes.
it sort of changed my mindset as well. And it was very, very necessary.
And you'll be getting a lot of airplay over in the States. I found that when I listen to the radio over here, I tend to find that the new artists that are being played on national radio stations tend to be people who are signed to big labels, which I think is all wrong, really, because it used to be the case of, like we mentioned in the 90s there, you would have people who are signed to the acid jazz label, like the Brand New Heavies and things like that, which was quite an a radical independent label, but they would be featured as, on the playlist of radio stations. And every time I listen to national radio, and I'll not mention any of these fee-paying stations, license fee-paying stations in the UK, so a lot of the artists which I hear are not independent artists. I wonder why that is, because in the States, like I say, totally different.
It's, it's an interesting thing, UK radio, and I think it's always constantly changing. I've been very lucky with regional radio. I've always been very much behind me, and I've had my moments with national radio. I really have had some really good support from them, but not in the way that like major label artists do. And I understand it, and I understand how that world works. But yeah, it is interesting to just see, and you're looking at people and you're like, oh, Universal sub label.
Yes.
And it kind of, that hasn't changed so much over the last decade. And I kind of feel like, well, at least I freed myself from that little comparison bubble for a while.
That's right. And you're having great success now.
I'm having a good time.
You've made the great escape, and you've got your confidence built up there in the States there. So the Big Apple is being very, very good to you. Now, on another note, you're a great supporter of the LGBTQ+ and humanitarian causes. The Trevor Project, Ali Forney Centre, HMI, ACLU, for the Gwals as well, if I'm saying that right, local independent LGBTQ+ businesses to helping them to survive and thrive. Please, could you tell us about these good causes and how listeners can help and support or maybe find out more?
So all of the ones that you mentioned are actually American-based charities, but what I try to do with my UK tours is I ask my fans on Twitter or on Facebook what the charities or organizations in their areas that really need amplification are, and I try to do fundraisers with ticket sales or donations at the venue for them, and I'll try and amplify whatever local body needs the most help. Like, we all know the cancer researchers, we all know the ones that have enough support to have national visibility. But especially now, you notice that there are so many more small charities very locally doing really essential work.
Yes.
Like women's rights, helping immigrants, helping families on low income, helping fight homophobia. There's so much that needs to be done that I feel like my responsibility, and I really want to help people help other people. For me, music is about community.
Yes.
And doing the shows is about community. And I love getting to travel the world and meet people in each town. So the real ethos of my shows is to be able to help the good people doing excellent work that really need as much help as possible.
Indeed, and with you being a public figure there, that's the perfect platform in order to maybe address, you know, and help charities, as it were, as well as, you know, sharing and bringing together people with your music.
Yeah, there's a lot of independent businesses. You know, I'm sure we all have friends that do, even if it's like small scale crafts and they sell their own works, or if they do volunteer work or charity work or animal work, or, you know, other people then do like maybe caring for the elderly or something. We all know people that are trying to do stuff to make the world a slightly better place. And then we know people that run their own shop or their own bar or their own restaurant. And each of these people that doesn't have a chain behind them relies on every single donation or every single transaction, like a sale, buying a beer, buying a CD, buying a book from their store, whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't think people understand the power that they have to support other people, you know, like sharing a person's song, posting about a friend's, if your friend's written a book, like I'm fortunate, lots of my friends have had the ability to publish a book. I'll post about their book. If your friend has like a swimming group that is open to people to join, post about that, you know. The power that you have just on your phone is really amazing. And you can do a lot of these things without spending a penny to help people stay afloat. Write a review of a local business, write a review of your friend's bar or coffee shop or whatever on Yelp or Google Maps, you know. It sounds really sad, but I'm like one of these like old aunts that writes reviews on Google Maps for every single place that I go to where the people are nice and that the food is good. And I get messages saying like, oh, 500,000 people saw that review, and you're like, wow, okay, wow. So that does actually make a difference, you know.
Excellent.
So I just try and do small things that I can, small steps to help whoever I can in whatever way I can.
Lovely. Yes. Everyone needs to help each other, as it were. Excellent. Excellent work you're doing there. Now back to the music and your forthcoming album, Enjoy Youth, which is released on your own record label, YSKWN. Sounds like it's going to be a great album. Please, could you tell us what we can expect?
It is an album that is meant to make you feel joy, basically. I haven't felt much joy since the COVID year and the years since, because I feel like a lot of people, it took a while to bounce back from that, you know?
Of course.
And it's been a bit of a rough ride. So I wanted the album to make people feel good and to remind people to focus on moments of joy. That doesn't negate the stuff that's going on around it. There's a lot going on in the world to digest and to process at the moment.
There is.
But to remember to allow yourself to feel joy in the spaces where you can, you know, whether it's people you love, something you love, a hobby that you have, peace and calm in whatever moments you can find in the day. So the album is really a reminder to like enjoy the time that we have, because it's limited and it's very precious. And I'm very lucky that I've met so many people across the world that I just love to bits. And I wrote it for them, and I wrote it for me, and I wrote it for all the amazing people that come to my shows that have just brought, like when I was on UK tour in September, the people that came and brought so much incredible energy to the rooms was very rejuvenating, very healing. And I want to keep that going. I want people to just remember that, like, contrary to what people in the government are trying to make you believe, life is actually quite beautiful. And if they would let it be, it would be amazing, but they won't. So we have to make it as amazing as we can ourselves.
Definitely, definitely. And we need more music like yours in the charts here in the UK. I know that for sure, because there's too much of the doom and gloom in the charts at the minute. Honestly, I'll tell you something. I would rather play independent artists on the radio than a lot of the other stuff that's around at the minute. And that's why I'm speaking to you today, because as soon as I heard your latest single, You Want My, which is a fabulous single, which is a great dance track, and it's very Pet Shop Boys-esque and quite uplifting. It was like, you know, we've got to have you on the show. Now, talking about the song, what was the story behind it, and how has it been received?
Well, I work a lot with this guy called Ian Masterson. If you've seen RuPaul's Drag Race recently, he's been the guest music producer. If you know Strictly Come Dancing, he does a lot of the music production work for that, which is amazing.
Yes, we watched that, yes.
He's also a regular collaborator for Bananarama and Danny Minogue.
Excellent.
And back in the day, he was involved in Planet Perfecto, and he was also a trouser enthusiast. So you would probably know him from that.
Yes, definitely. No, yes, we know the trouser enthusiasts there. We do indeed, yes.
So fabulous. I work with him a lot, and he sent me this instrumental to the song. And the idea was to write a song for somebody else, you know, like pitching it for other artists. Yeah. And I heard the instrumental, and I was like, no, this is mine. I really, really loved it. I was like, it made me feel so powerful and so alive, you know, like when you said it was sort of Pet Shop Boys-esque, it really was. It made me feel like a Pet Shop Boy. I love Pet Shop Boys so much.
Yeah.
And it really lives in their world of the kind of like the very era where it's just outrageous pop music, outrageous dance music. And I wrote the top line, like the vocal parts, really quickly and just loved them. So I sent them to Ian and he really liked it as well. And then we agreed that I could keep it and use it as the first track on this new album, because it really did make me feel like alive again, you know, really
definitely
alive. And I hope that it just makes people dance and feel fabulous about themselves.
It is. It's a great positive tune. I would highly recommend it. It's called You Want My, and it's out now. Now, you were talking about your tour. Where were you? Where did you tour last year there? Because I've missed out on that one.
Yeah, it was a very small tour last year. It was just Bristol, Brighton, Birmingham, Glasgow, Manchester, and London, I think.
No Newcastle there.
No Newcastle. No, unfortunately not. No, the really difficult thing is that the cost of like petrol and stuff has gone up so much. This is not meant to be like a doom and gloom thing either, but the cost of traveling has gone up so much that I've had to really scale back on how many places we stop on tour. And I actually do the tours by public transport to try and be a little bit less carbon
footprint
heavy.
Of course, yes.
But yeah, we just didn't make it work last time. And hopefully this year I'll be back in Newcastle. I love it. I have some amazing friends in Newcastle
who make
me laugh so much. Yeah. Yeah, any suggestions, very welcome.
Definitely. Well, yes, you've got to fill that Newcastle arena. I know that.
I think I got a little bit before that, babes.
Unless you want to start at the City Hall in Newcastle, which a lot of great acts have performed there. And also there's a place which used to be called the Sage Gate, said it's called the Glass House.
I think I've heard of that.
And it looks like an armadillo on the side of the River Tyne. Right. But that place
is
excellent.
Know what? I think I did Town Hall with Erasure a couple of years ago.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, which was amazing. Amazing, amazing show. And like Erasure is like my favorite pop band.
They are fabulous. I've been trying to get them on this show. I don't know what's going on there.
Oh, they're probably busy.
I don't know. You'll have to have a word there. You'll have a word.
I'll do my best.
Now, you have some tour dates coming up in 2024. You're going to be performing at Mighty Hoopla Festival in London, which is June the 1st.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. That's the first one we've announced, and the rest will be announced shortly, I believe.
Oh, right. Am I keeping the rest of them secret? I've got another three dates I can mention.
Yeah, they're not announced yet.
Right, we'll not announce them. Right, okay. But you've had an exclusive there.
Mm-hmm.
By listening in and watching today, Mighty Hoopla Festival London, June the 1st and June the 2nd. So where can listeners get tickets for your gigs and follow your music?
So my website is brightlightx2.com. On all social media, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or X, or whatever you call it now. It's brightlightx2 is my handle on all of those. So if you find me there, you will find convenient links to listen at your leisure. If you type Bright Light into Spotify or Apple Music or Tidal or Deezer or whatever you use, I will come right up. And there is a little playlist that will show you everything that I've done so far, or you can go album by album, whatever you like to do to consume music. And thank you to anyone that follows me. I post lots of pictures of cats as well. So if you're an animal lover, then you will not be disappointed.
Lovely, lovely. By the way, I've got a comment on those glitter. I mean, those of you who are listening into the radio here at the minute, if you are watching this on YouTube, which will be posted at a later date, I love them glitter balls behind you there. Mm,
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful. Do they rotate or are they just hanging
they
there?
They don't. I have two other disco balls in my living room that do rotate.
Wow.
This is my studio area, so these ones are static, just so that I don't get too vertigo laden when I'm making my music.
So do you have your Elton John music on and your Scissor Sisters as well as your music and have all the
around,
lights going and everything?
All my disco greats. And I've got George Michael there.
Oh, yes, I see him there. Yes.
The Eternal number one.
That looks like it's from the older album.
It is. It's from the box set that came out last year.
Oh, yes. That's wonderful.
The little inserts that they gave.
Yeah. Absolutely fabulous. I absolutely love George Michael. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. He still is because he's living on forever with his music there. Now, on another note, the vinyl revival is upon us around the world. So may I ask you, what is your favorite vinyl record you have ever bought and why?
This is always a
difficult one, this one.
Yeah, it is. It's a really difficult one. What I'm going to say is maybe not the one I bought, but Kylie Minogue's Light Years album.
Right.
When it was reissued exclusively through Sainsbury's, which made me so angry, I can't even describe to you.
Wow.
Because I don't live in the UK, and there was this crazy rush to buy them. And obviously people bought them and just put them on eBay.
Two of
my fans direct messaged me on Twitter and asked if I wanted them to get it for me. And one of them managed to get me one and he sent it to me. And I'm going to be forever grateful for that, because as a person that grew up in the UK, Light Years was my favorite pop album. And I love having it on vinyl. I love that album so much. I didn't buy that one myself, so that's cheating a little bit. But it's one that is very precious to me, because I know that it disappeared. And it's when I go on Discogs, it's my second most expensive record, actually.
I bet it is as well. My goodness. And it's Sainsbury's exclusive as well.
It was, yeah. They did a couple of them as a Sainsbury's exclusive. I don't know quite what was going on there, but I'm assuming they got a sweet deal from it.
I bet. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Now, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Can you believe it, Rod? Time flies when you're having fun. So all I can say is thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Good luck with the album and your single as well. And finally, would it be possible for you to introduce your latest single, please?
Yes, of course. Thank you for having me. I am Bright Light, Bright Light. This is my new single, which was written both as a loving homage to Pet Shop Boys with the music and George Michael, actually, because the title is a reference to I Want Your Sex.
Yes.
And this is my loving homage to both those artists called You Want My.
Thank you very much, Rod. Thank you so much for joining me of Bright Light, Bright Light. And we'll speak to you soon. It'd be great to have you on the show again in the future.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Bye.